Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Michael Hudson. Michael is the CEO and chairman of Hannon Metals Corp. He also serves on the board of directors of that company. Michael is a geologist with a rich career as an exploration geologist. I think of him as an economic geologist. I don't know if he considers himself that, but I think every geologist that's involved in finding deposits has to start thinking about the economic potential of those deposits. And I know Michael gives a great deal of thought to that, so hopefully we'll talk to him a little bit about that. He's, as I say, a rich history. He's been in Pakistan, Australia, and Peru. We spent a lot of time in Peru, and that's where Hannon Metals is involved in exploration and developing what has the potential, I believe, to become a world-class sedimentary-hosted copper and silver deposit. The Hannon story is a very exciting one, and one in which I think investors have a chance to make a lot of money. It's certainly one that I'm really excited about. I purchased it myself. It is a recommendation in my newsletter, so I'm really pleased to say hello to Michael. Thanks for joining me again, Michael.
Good morning from Australia.
And good evening from New York City here on Friday, and your Saturday morning there. I should just mention quickly to my listeners, Hannon trades in Toronto under the symbol HAN. You can buy it down here in the States, as I have, under HANNF. 74.7 million shares outstanding at 39 cents in Canadian money gives it a market cap of around $29 million in Canadian funds. So it's still a baby of a company, but it's a baby of a company with quite a large target that it's looking at and very nice grades. So, Michael, I'm wondering if you could, maybe as much as possible in lay terms, give our listeners a sense of the scale and grade of what you're seeing with your copper and silver sedimentary hosted deposit there. It's known as the San Martin Project in Peru. And then perhaps tell us, talk about some reasons for optimism with this project.
Thanks, Jay. We have this project that you've outlined very well in northeastern Peru. It's over the Andes and into the high jungle, relatively new part of the world to explore. That's seen a lot of oil exploration from the 80s, but literally the mineral explorers of the world haven't really done much work there. And so we're the first mover. We've got a staking rush around us now in terms of other peers coming in. But we've been slowly acquiring ground in this area since 2018, and then permits were started to be granted at the end of 2019. And then we literally got in there at the end of 2019 and had four teams working. And the opportunity has become very evident only over the last 6 months, really, how this project's been pulled together. So in lay terms, we have a sediment-hosted system, which means that just much, very much like the layers of a cake, our copper forms at those layers, and it's forming at layers that are incredibly vast. We've got tenure over 120 kilometres, and we've got some very good past geological information from the oil explorers that allows us to say that one piece of the cake joins to other pieces mm-hmm. of the cake layer over that 120 kilometres. Mm-hmm. And the grade is good. We're seeing grades that are very similar to analogues at a much earlier stage. So the key analogue here is what is called the Kupferschiefer, which is the world's single largest silver producer, even though it's a copper mine, and it's the sixth largest copper producer on Earth. Also, it's in Poland, and we're seeing grades and thicknesses of similar scale. But of course, this is exploration; it's early days, and there's inherent risk in taking points in space and drawing lines between them without doing the work. And so, we're trying mm-hmm. to infill those lines.
Mm-hmm. Right, and when do you think you might start? We always, you're looking at surface mineralization, aren't you? You're getting right on surface. You're doing these samples, grab samples, or I don't know, channel samples, or grab samples, or what kind of samples are you getting?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jay. So we're literally the prospectors of the past with our boots and our geological hammers, and we're walking up creeks and finding little thumbnail green chips, and these chips become bigger and bigger until you get boulders, the size of sort of the bonnet of your car, and then they stop. So that's where they're shedding down from the hills above us, and we walk up the hills or find the roads. And that's the impressive thing, is that we're now becoming predictive in which areas to go and find where the rock comes to surface. And then we can ship it, and that's where we're getting those thicknesses and grades over tens and tens of kilometres. So it's early stage, no drilling yet. In fact, it needs a lot more geological work to nail down just the better parts of the system. And we've got a team of four geologists and support staff ready to buy them back to Peru.
So did you say you have people on the ground there now that can do that, or you're going to have to send some people in to do that kind of work?
Well, it wasn't that obvious. We've got local team in Lima. One senior person who comes in and out of the country, Lars Dalenbori, who's been the brains really behind pulling this together on the ground. But everybody, you never succeed. I've had a history of working around the world, and you never succeed with bringing in foreigners. You need to use local people. And we've got local people working for us on the ground from a social licensing perspective today, and they're moving around the community, and we're supporting the community and helping the community during this terrible disease that is spreading around the world. But the other team members come from other parts of Peru.
Mm-hmm. Let me just ask you, Michael, this structure is relatively flat lying then, I guess, right? You're talking about beds that are flat lying, or what's the orientation? You say you have a lot of information because of the oil drillers in the past, so you have a lot about structure, I guess, is what I'm getting at, right? And the orientation of these beds.
Now, there's a few key points around that question, James. It's a good one. We do know at the gross scale where this layer exists over the 120 kilometres. We can be predictive where it hits the surface, and we can be predictive of how it goes beneath the surface. We build a 3D model from that vast data that's 300 kilometres long and 180 kilometres wide. So that's an unusual perspective to be able to do that in any basin in the world for a mineral explorer. The other key point is that the orientation matters for potential mining. If these are quite thin, at least at some of the areas that we found, we have found thicker zones as well. But if it's going to be thin, you want it to be relatively flat lying, because then the mineability of it and the continuity of it, where you can actually mine it at a cost that makes sense, is much more amenable, I suppose, is a key point. So you don't want it to be too steep, and we've got gently folding, a bit like waves, right? They go up and down, but it's not like a vertical wall.
Well, that's positive. Then, of course, we'll be learning much more as you start drilling and we get the third dimension in this deposit. Well, you know, the last time you were on, I think it was March 17th, so we're almost 3 months ago. It is more than 3 months ago, or something like that. Anyway, I want to ask you, you've had a lot of information. I mean, just this month, you put out several news releases, and the stock has performed very well, even though copper hasn't really been, well, I guess it's up a little bit. Silver's up a little bit. Gold's been really the hot metal. But your shares are really performing quite well, I'd say, in spite of, but you've had a lot of information. Maybe you could cover some of the things that have taken place since we last spoke on March 17th. For example, back on May 28th, you say you increased your granted mining concession by 50% in Peru. So is that 110-kilometer strike that you're talking about, I guess that includes that 50% increase in land size, right?
Yeah, so what we had was that we had applications that moved to be granted, which allows us to work on them. So the Peruvian administration was very busy, and it's very important, right? Because an application is just a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. A granted concession allows you certain rights to potentially to explore it definitely and potentially mine it. We're not talking about mining now; we're just exploring. But it gives you that license. So that was that. That's very, a key part of the story, of course.
Yeah.
Since then, the results that have flowed since last time we spoke and how quickly time does go is from all the work we did, the work programs during December through to March. And And the key, really, the key aspect is that we're demonstrating the continuity of this project at various scales. So we're working literally over 100 kilometres, and then we started to narrow it down to sort of a 20-kilometre trend where we're finding these grades in outcrop that we just talked about. And then most importantly, we're starting to narrow it down over a few kilometres of scale, and we found a new area that's a couple of kilometres south of one area that we knew about, and then we were able to find multiple points within a 500-metre trend. And this is important because it's just demonstrating and building confidence at the different scales, and ultimately that will come by drilling, but this is the kind of thing we want to see, and there's a lot more work to be done and a lot more ground to walk on. And literally, you know, I was in the field with teams just at the end of February, early March also, and it was very exciting, you know, daily that the teams were bringing back new discoveries of copper and silver, and there's nothing more thrilling than that for an exploration geologist.
Hmm. Absolutely. Well, I guess you're able to do an awful lot of work in preparation for that drilling then, before you start to do the really expensive work and start putting drill holes down. You are pretty well funded though, I believe, aren't you, Michael, for what you're doing now anyway?
Yes, we raised $2.2 million at the Canadian at the end of December, January. And we had a $1.5 million budget, which we're only a little bit into, really, and that included some drilling that we hoped it was going to be at the end of this year. Of course, that's going to be pushed into next year now with the delays we've seen from the COVID lockdown. But we've got $1.5 million in the bank still, no urgency to seek any funding necessarily. Although there's a hell of a lot of interest in this project, Jay.
Oh yes, there is indeed, and I think given the scale and the grades and all of that, I can't imagine that there aren't some big mining companies that at least know about what you're about or know something about what's going on there. Just with a couple of minutes left, then, Michael, you know, you've had a lot of experience. You've worked. You've been in this industry for quite a few years. Give us an idea of what really has to come together to make something work, to make something really, really good. What are some of the ingredients? I mean, we know that it's always good to look at people who have been successful. It's one of the reasons that you're in my newsletter and why I like to look at your company. Projects always matter. Can you fund? Those kind of things. But just in general, what should investors, because there's a lot of new people starting to pay attention to this space now, what should they really be watching for? What does it take from the early stages as your project is to make it work? What should people be watching for?
Yeah, it's really a question around management of exploration, which is really only similar to if you're going to find another industry that is a comparable is R&D in the pharmaceutical business. So we have scientists who are second. Well, who collect data, make theories, and then collect more data and alter their theories based on that new data. It's often unsuccessful. Exploration is not a very forgiving business, and it's not many geologists that make those discoveries. And literally, we've got a filter, and so it's risk management internally, and that's risk at so many different levels: geological risk, political risk, geological the details of every little piece of data that we take in the field every day, whether we should go back and explore there or explore anywhere else. But simply put, you want to back your technical team if you have the right people. You want to give them consistency of funding, but you don't want geologists who are starting to prove something is not there. So you want them to move on because it's a cost benefit business and like any business is, and you don't want to spend dollars when they'd be better spent elsewhere. So really what we do, and the simple line is back the right people is, and those right people are the managers of risk. And then you've got to have a sniff or a sense, and it's tenacity of only a few people that I know who make those discoveries. And they're generally the people that are hard to manage. They're the people that go out on a limb and you know, that go the extra mile, you know, like extra 50 meters up the hill to get that outcrop.
Uh huh. So they've got people that have a mind of their own as independent thinkers, I guess, also. So if I hear what you're saying is fatal flaws, if you can find the fatal flaw early on, then move on to another project. That's one of the keys, right?
That's one of the key points, absolutely, because geologists tend to fall in love with a project that's said, and so you want geologists who are commercial, who know all the aspects of whether something can work, and that's just not rocks in the ground, but that's social risk, political risk, that's metallurgical risk, that's mining risk that we've touched on in our talk today. So there's so many aspects, and another show in the making there for you, Jay. I think if we're going to talk about one through.
We sure could do that, and I find it very interesting that you compare it to the pharmaceutical industry, because my good friend Chen Lin, who does very well both in the exploration industry and in the pharmaceutical industry, says the same thing. It really it's very much very similar in many ways. So I guess that's about all the time we have today. Any last word, maybe what people should be watching for, any news that might be on the horizon?
Well, we're keeping working behind the scenes here, Jay, with so many things. Both technically, we can work with the data, and we're talking with lots of potential partners as well. So we're still very busy in Hannon, and the news flow will continue.
Wonderful. Looking forward to it. It's an exciting story for sure. So thank you very much, Michael, for being with us, and we'll look to keep up with you in the future.
Always a pleasure, Jay. Thank you for having me on again.